Welcome to Close Playing. I'm Tevis Thompson, and in this episode, I'll be talking with Jess Joho about Inside. Jess writes about media, sex, and gender for Killscreen, where she's also an editor. Her work is candid, probing, fierce, often bracing, and it pulls no punches. The game we discussed, Inside, is Playdead's follow-up to their 2010 hit, Limbo. In this spiritual sequel, a nameless boy is drawn across a ruined landscape towards an ending that is both rousing and unsettling. Jess and I spoke a couple weeks after the presidential election, and we discussed what it was like to play Inside in light of it. We also talked about the meaning of the title, why Inside is better than Limbo, and the pathos of moving an avatar across a screen. I should also note that a recording glitch occurred toward the end of our conversation, so unfortunately the last 25 minutes had to be cut. Welcome, Jess. Thanks for coming on.
Happy to be here.
So I know both of us played it a couple months ago and more recently, and those experiences were recording this less than 2 weeks after the election. And so I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about your experience playing the game originally and recently. Whatever struck you about playing it.
Yeah, and this post-Trump, post-truth, as the Oxford Dictionary
right,
would have it.
Right.
When we were talking about a little bit before, we talked about how this game is so, and it's not vagueness, but I guess it's simplicity of its kind of like forces that it puts in play. Mm-hmm. It has so many different means of interpretation, angles. It seems to be saying something very clearly, but then if you inspect that a little bit further, it kind of really branches off and complicates. Mm-hmm. Once you inspect it, once you do like a close reading or close playing, as mm-hmm. you would say.
Right.
But I don't know, in the post-Trump world way of looking at it, I kind of saw, at first I just got this, simple message of, this is how the machine works, is that how mm-hmm. systems kind of make, its most basic level of, this is what happens when you put humanity through a machine, mm-hmm. through a system, mm-hmm. and what comes out. And I think within that it's very complicated, but when I kind of came at it in this post-Trump kind of disillusioned, and I don't know if it was only because of him or because I had the time to kind of come at it more slowly,
right.
It wasn't just me consuming it for the first time, but I saw a lot of metaphors for, a system that, which I think we can all agree, at whatever, side of the world you're on, we can all agree we live in a male-dominating, patriarchy, and I saw a lot
right,
of,
right.
I realized, all of the avatars, almost all of them, are male in this game, and
right.
I think the women are there. There's female voices at the end when you're the flesh monster. I think there's the siren who's like this. My favorite part of the whole game is the like female underwater female siren
mm-hmm,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it's this. The workers, the bystanders, you're a boy, it's the office workers,
right,
the doctors, the onlookers, they're all men.
Right.
That's kind of fundamentally, to me, I was surprised. I definitely didn't read that at all. And I, to the people who I know are going to be saying, I bring in gender into places that they don't exist. I think, not to be self-referential, but at Killscreen, our review of it, had some Simone de Beauvoir quotes in there, and I just
mm-hmm.
think when you're talking about a system that very clearly most societies, if not all societies, live under, it does have those relationships between the two. That's the
right.
main difference for me.
Right. I mean, however you want to interpret it, the fact of the maleness of the vast majority of the cast is just a fact you can you can pay attention to or you can ignore
totally.
In your interpretation, but it's there. So was that a difference for you the first time you played it versus now?
Mm-hmm.
Like you really noticed it the second time?
For sure, yeah. I didn't notice at all the first time. And then I realize, and I think it's just, you know, I don't even know if it's conscious of it. I don't know. It doesn't need to be kind of conscious mm-hmm. of it to still speak to. And I think sure. that's inside strength, is that because it's so starkly about a system and mm-hmm. like about just about that, you know, all with all the simplicity and complexity of just looking at what a system does.
Right.
It, because of that, it can kind of, like you said, you can kind of ignore it. You can put, you know, you can see things, you can not see things, and it still, you know, makes sense to this complete world. But once I saw that, I couldn't unsee it, and sure. everything, every right. symbolism, like it built on top of itself, which to me shows how it's, the structure of the game is so sound in what it's trying to say right. that it can, build upon, this thing. And I think the difference I saw is, you know, it has been on my mind, obviously, like rooting around in my unconscious, mm-hmm. like, you know, that glass ceiling that didn't get broken, right. you know, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And not only that, but like, I don't know, that, you know, the people supporting it, it's not just, you know, so many women also, you know, voted mm-hmm. for this. Mm-hmm. And just seeing Hillary throughout the whole thing, just seeing how it's kind of impossible within the structure, within a system, it's almost impossible for us to imagine, you know, a world where the president is a woman. Mm-hmm. So it just kind right. of, I don't know, it fed into that so much to me. And I can talk about it a little bit later, but like the siren itself, like kind of the symbolism, what she represents mechanically in the game, at what point, you know, kind of she takes you under, mm-hmm. underneath the system kind of thing, where I think all of that just really spoke to me this time, and where it didn't before. I think I was so consumed with the experience of it. I wasn't, the analytical part of my brain wasn't really paying attention, but it's this kind of feminist Marxist approach that, you know, is putting my liberal, you know, the liberal college degree.
Right. 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 Talking about the underwater long haired siren creature, you're calling her, mm-hmm. Did you then take, so, you know, at that point in the game, you, after avoiding her or numerous creatures like that, you're pulled under and kind of reborn of sorts. You mm-hmm. seem to die. You gain the ability to breathe underwater and to control some of the other puppet drones without the mechanical like interface, right, without the cap. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, allows you to not only get to the end, but do what you have to do with the blob thing in the tank at the end. Mm-hmm. So given all that, did you think that, was this, maybe the one noticeably female character, or at least female signifying character in the game, mm-hmm. was this, I guess I'm getting at how you interpret the ending, because that's the kind of turning point at which, you know, the inevitability of the ending kind of comes into play. And I'm just wondering if, is that like a, I guess, I don't, basically like a, is a positive thing, what she does to you under the water? And how did you, I guess, feel about that in terms of the end?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. I didn't even think about that. But what's weird about her is that I think she is this kind of, what she presents to a player, at least, is like, she's different from the other monsters, it mm-hmm. feels like. You know, she's mm-hmm. not totally acting, in my opinion, within the system. She's kind of, this fascinating, kind of disruptive force. And I think she kind of, like you said, kind of rebirths you. Mm-hmm. But it's in this world where, for the first time, you see the machines and these like kind of structures of the system, mm-hmm. you know, these office buildings, mm-hmm. they're like completely powerless. You know, all the power and impact they had and mm-hmm. brute force they have on land, underneath, they're just like rusting,
right,
you
right.
know, shells. There's, right. you know, overrun by fish. Right. And you don't really have to, in that brief moment of that she gives you of this kind of like, and also just, I mean, in terms of mechanically, it's the first time your agency is taken away, is when she's right. holding you and she's bringing you under and you can't move.
Right.
And,
right.
And it's the first time you're out of control, out of power.
Right. That's
and,
a good point.
Yeah. And then I think she kind of, it's this demonstration of, you know, however much power, you know, we build these monuments of buildings and, you know, these systems, that make you think that, you know, that man-made things are, you know, the ultimate power of destruction and all these things, they still have to submit to this other bigger power, which is, you know, Mother Nature. It's mm-hmm. water. It's, they mm-hmm. rust as well. You know, they, right. You know, they get subsumed by water.
Right. Which that would suggest perhaps that at the, you know, the last, you know, maybe fourth, when they mm-hmm. invert the gravity of water, mm-hmm. that is a more like fundamental breaking of nature, right? Given that your kind of baptism happens underwater with her, and then to have that all like literally turned upside down, yeah. it seems then, again, I'm maybe going towards what we think of the ending in terms of how grim or hopeful it is, but that is certainly taking some of the most natural laws that we know of and turning them upside down and breaking them in a way that makes, I mean, you need it, you know, you have your ability to swim forever and control things, but I don't know, it for me undercut a lot of, you know, sense of how total is the control over this world, you know, because there's such a sense of abandonment throughout. There's all those abandoned buildings, abandoned labs, abandoned creatures, abandoned pigs, right? Everything's that's outlived its usefulness has been, you know, thrown aside, and there's piles of stuff, and the whole world has this sense of abandon. And then you get to the end, or the last final sections, and it just seems so total that I you know, I don't know what how you overcome that in the end, or how what the game is suggesting about that. Did you feel when you got to the blob and escape, how did that feel to you when you played?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally, for me, I the way I think of it is like, once you become the blob, you become the masses, right? In the metaphor mm-hmm. of whatever it is, mm-hmm. you stop being anything of an individual, and you just become this representation of masses rebelling in this way, not really, or doing something that the system or that people didn't expect. You know, I think it's weird, and of course, like the vagueness of this kind mm-hmm. of, it's hard for us to put in even into words, because it's subtle cues, like when you become the blob, you know, people are actually like cheering you on and like showing you where to get inside the blob. And then you get in, and all of a sudden they're terrorized, and they're like, oh, we didn't expect you to kind of mm-hmm. actually leave the tank. And that's the first act, I think, where you do something that was unexpected. Yeah, I think what's so depressing about that is that even when you do rebel, as the masses, you, in the end, what they do, the very last kind of scene, are we allowed to, we're allowed to spoil, right?
Oh, everything. Yeah. Everything's on the table.
Okay. So, last scene, you know, you're trying to go for that, the final puzzle, you're trying to go for, the final cube that, you know, you've mm-hmm. been using to right. push up, right. And it's being like dangled in front of you. And then you realize that it's because the ground opens up beneath you, and they've tricked you into going into another tank. And then you're kind of, and it's just a bunch of shadows of people who walk away and watch as the doors close, and you're left in this, like, you know, another underwater kind of just tank to the side. But then, you know, the implications to me is that it doesn't matter whether you, because you're right, you're not useful at the system anymore. So it doesn't matter to the system whether you choose to stay in this tank and die and rot forever or to escape. It makes no difference to it. It doesn't right. care about you anymore. You are so other, you are so outside of what the system needs from you that, is it better? You know what I mean? At least when you were underwater, you know, in like the sirens kind of underwater worlds, which is kind of, you know, a subversion of the system. It's still within the system, but a subversion of it. You at least were still in it, you know, in some way. Yep, and now you are just out on the outside. And is it better? Like, does it feel any better? You can't even really escape because you're still being, you know, you still live in comparison to what is on the inside
right,
of those.
Right. Yeah. I wondered at the end, and I don't know how you felt in that very last moment when you're kind of on the beach, deflating sort of, and at rest, maybe dying, maybe it's obviously meant to be ambiguous, but it's there's a sense in which, you know, when the people are terrorized, they're fascinated and then terrorized, and then they are seem to be helping you, and it gives you know, the game is not filled with many warm feelings, but it's close to one. And then but for that to all come together at the end again with that, like you said, the in the shadows, all the people have been gathered basically to watch your final, you know, imprisonment. And that it undercuts a lot of that to, like, what were they really doing? Just trying to, like, you know, get you to the point where they could, you know, finally capture you again? Or were they, you know, was there any sympathetic souls among the workers? Or is everybody, what are the sides even here? You know, everybody appears to be kind of on the same side, but it's hard to tell. And so then when you're left in the end, you know, the system doesn't care about you, but how do you, what are you left to feel when you're, you know, tumbling out, the closest thing to an outside the game, you know, title hints at, and yet there on the beach as the credits roll and stuff, you're just kind of, was that, I mean, how did you feel at that the very last moment?
Yeah. The first time I was like, I just need therapy. Like, I don't even know. The second time I think I felt, I don't know. And this, I mean, I think in the post-Trump world, I will continue to use that world because this is a different world than what was 2 weeks ago, you know. I think we can all agree to that, whether you are happy or sad. I think it just showed to me that, and I think, you know, we like to think of it as you escape, you know, you're, is it possible to escape the system? But I think a better way of thinking of it is progress possible within the system. If you can only, if you get on the outside and you know you're kind of just left to rot on a beach anyway. And I started to see it as, you know, obviously this feels like a unique instance because we are playing it, but the second time I played it, I realized, oh, this happens a lot. This happens, this isn't the first time this has happened. It felt like part of this cycle where you know, whether you the player are part of it or not, it is expected that these kind of like rebellious acts occur, and then they get, you know, kind of,
it's built into the system, right?
Exactly. And that's what makes it such a good totalitarian system, is that it actually builds in humanity into it. You know, I think when we see how the NPCs, they're kind of acting in a confused way, sometimes counterintuitive to how you would expect, you know, a cog in a machine to act. That's because no matter what, where you go, whether it's North, whatever totalitarian, you know, country or in history or now, you know, if you go there, you still, the humanity finds a way, no matter how inhumane system, humanity breaks through because it's, you know, that's, it's just, you know, people act as people. No matter how oppressive a system. So, you know, people in, you know, the NPCs are acting out of fear. You know, they're, one of the guys, one of the workers, you know, opens a door simply because he wants to get out, or he wants you to leave, the monster to leave. But he's still helping you out of some fear. You know, it's just this, people don't react the way a system expects it to. And a really good oppressive system finds a way to use that humanity to still, you know, limit what that, the possibility of humanity breaking through.
Because it seems like you do some things that are, you know, not that they've never been done before, but, you know, you appear to kill an executive, right? In an office, and you certainly, people, when you break out of the water, the initial like cage, the, people are laying on the ground, look like they've been, you know, crushed by you. And there's definitely something that happens, that seems a little different. And yet when I was especially playing, I didn't notice this the first time I played, but when I played through it a second time, there's a moment when you are kind of, you know, rampaging through the office as the blob, and you fall into this, like, one of, you know, many glass cages, and there is a kind of diorama, like a miniature landscape in this cage that looks exactly like the ending of the game. And so, you know, it has the hill going down, it has the light shining down on the edge, just like the final scene of the game. And so to find a model of that within their lab, you know, it makes it harder to find much hope in the ending, or to find much relief if it's, again, part of the, you know, sort of one of the scenarios imagined by this experiment. And so that, you know, playing it through the second time, once I'd kind of seen the ending in miniature in the lab, I was like, oh, this is, you know, foreseen and accounted for. Already the fact that, you know, when you get to that ending and you just kind of start deflating and you seem hurt, you know, the kind of groans as you're moving along, there's a comedic element to it, but it's also, you know, it's just total body horror, you know, 15 minutes. And so there is a relief at the end, but it still begs the larger question of have I really escaped? You know, is there any outside at all in a system that seems as total as this? And even the blob, like, you know, if I was showing it to a friend and he asked at the very beginning, why am I running? Like, who am I, like, you know, just the game just kind of starts on media res. It just kind of throws you in. And he's like, well, wait, where am I going? Why am I? And I was like, well, just wait. But, you know, one interpretation would be that the blob is drawing you to it to escape, totally. Right? Because it has those seeming like four of those mind control things. It's like a super version of the other lab experiments. And it would make sense that you know, something that wanted its escape would draw in people to help it. Because at some point, you see others in the background running towards it. As if you're not the only one being drawn. I even started to imagine, like, I think when I played it recently, like, each of my deaths could be a different boy. You know, I mean, it's consistent in a way that, like, it doesn't need specifically me in my, you know, my red shirt and all of that. So I don't know. I think the blob is like an object of sympathy in the game and horror. And yet, if it's given how much the game is about control and you controlling things, it sets up a lot of, you know, unease and disquiet at the end, because, you know, if you imagine that the blob is who's controlling you until you reunite, then I don't know, the whole time you get a hint of this, right, when you first use one of the puppet drones to control another puppet drone, right? And that was to me kind of like a revelatory moment where, okay, I can control these puppets, but a puppet can control another puppet. And if I can go another level that way, then I must be able to go another level back. Right. Mm. Right. That, I mean, it doesn't assert my subjectivity, since the supposed drone can control another drone through me. It doesn't mean I'm the endpoint of my subjectivity. Something could be behind me. And then when you see the blob, so it just, you know, by the end and playing it multiple times, I think you're right, does help you see things, because the first time it's just kind of, you know, it's a game, I mean, meticulously made game that is so, got, you know, one thing after another that's kind of surprising or interesting, and you're just kind of keeping up the first time. But the second time actually I played was with my wife. I played it myself, and then anytime I can find a game I think she'll like, because she doesn't really like a lot of games, then I try it out, and she was into it. But I was just watching mostly and kind of, you know, being like just sitting beside her. And I could, once I began to see those things by the time I played last week again, it, the growing sense of kind of unease about all of these systems and the possibility of escape or impossibility was really beginning to land. And then, of course, post-election, it all seems, you know, it all just feels closer. I mean, you're right that things feel like they've changed, and they've also been revealed for what they already were and always were. I don't know, feeling closer to that and maybe that sense of hopelessness, or that sense of the world revealing, you know, what it's really doing. And the game is just so full of vulnerable bodies. When I was playing it this week, I was just like, I don't know. I think the game, for all of its grimness, has this kind of sadness. And I mean, like, all the drones and experiments are very sympathetic and kind of likable in a way. The way they are kind of shambling around with you, they're pitiful at times, but they're also, I don't want to say sweet, but there's something, you know,
human.
Yeah, there's something, you know, you start with those chicks as your first kind of, you know, imprinting drones, and then you have the workers, and then the experiments at the end, and even the experiments who are missing limbs and are trying to, like, it is pitiful, but it's also sympathetic in a way that the game is, that's in some ways the way to the tone of the game was giving me some way to relate to all of this and maintain any sense of humanity, because the game was not in its plot or what happens, but in its treatment of these figures. And I didn't know what to do with that at the end, but yeah, it definitely left me feeling, I don't know, this week it left me feeling vulnerable in a different way, I suppose.
Totally. I think it's biggest, and to me, like, why to me it works the best as this allegory of the patriarchy is that, you know, nobody wins, is mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. The system wins, mm-hmm. You know, there is, I think man kind of put the structure in place, but it doesn't, you know, it eats everyone alive and spits mm-hmm. them out, you know, like you said, you know, the executive gets crushed under you and things go on, nobody cares, there's no dogs after
right
you.
Right,
you know, set. Right. He was just a pawn with all his power, his executive power. Ooh, his executive bureaucratic.
Right.
No, and none of it matters. He gets crushed under the weight of the masses, and everyone moves on, and no one cares. And the system
right.
just continues. And it's kind of, to me, that's where it's most. You know, even the people in power are supposedly, you know, it's just this trick. And and you know, to, I don't know if we want to get into the secret ending, which
I never
did it, but I kind of, you know, seen uh-huh. You know, I've seen it on the internet, and to me it does give credence to the theory that, you know, the blob was calling you, and I don't think it's like the only blob, I don't think it's, you know, you're the only boy, I don't mm-hmm. think right. you know, but I do think the you know, you are being controlled in a way, and I think you know, it speaks to, I don't know, yeah, just this, like, when the system is set up and these dynamics are put in place, no, you can't really take any relationship at face value. You can't take the NPC's relationship to you at face value, can't take your relationship with Blob at face value, and you can't take your own relationship to, like, how the game works, you know, if you take it on the meta sense, like, right. when you zoom out. Yeah, I don't know, it's just, it's this totally... You know, it's about when I think what people kind of sell this game short is when they say, oh, it's a game about games, you know, but I don't
right, right.
get it. So I think it's a game about systems, which games are particularly adept at showing
right,
and
right,
investigating.
Right.
And yeah, I mean,
I agree with that. I just maybe before for those who don't know the secret ending, but essentially, you know, you find. You know, little secret, they look like the mind control device sort of, but in like a little, just a little, unit or sphere with lights on it. And you find, I don't know, 12 or 13 of them along the path that you're, as if they're these receivers along the way. If you disconnect each of them, then you can go back and find an underground room under the cornfield and find, you know, kind of like what seems to be the central, hub of all of them. And you unplug that. And then suddenly your figure crouches down into the kneeling position that all the drones have been in when you're done using them in the game. So, yeah, it, like you said, it gives credence to all of that. But I agree with you that the game, games about games are a particularly obnoxious genre or, you mm-hmm. know, for me. I when games try to, you know, say something about control or the avatar or choice, you know, like in the BioShock way, or, you know, something, you know, those games that want to blame you, they want to titillate you and give you all the pleasures of a game and then chastise you. I always, mm-hmm. I go very tired of that and find those games that don't have they don't seem to have the courage of their conviction, or otherwise they would have designed an alternative and not just replicated it and given you all the pleasures while also showing you that they were kind of above it all and you should have been. So yeah. I don't have much patience for those kind of games, and I would be primed if this game were done a little differently to not like that either. But I think you're right that it's not simply a game about games. It is more about a system, an ultimate inside of the world that you can't escape. And, you know, games, I think there's many fantasies that, you know, games offer, the ones we're familiar with, the power fantasies and stuff like that. But I think there's also like kind of systems thinking fantasy, in that because games model systems, and often explicitly, right, they don't make them opaque. They let you see the numbers. They let you see a lot of, you know, the machinery. They give you this sense of being above or outside of it, right? So a lot of games, they you know, maybe it's just a strategy game or something, or just like a, you know, got a lot of numbers, but it gives you the sense of you're in it because you're playing it, but you're floating above it, and it gives you this sense of like, oh, I'm outside of this, a fantasy of outside, and this game inside. I don't think it allows that. I don't think it gives you any quarter. I don't think it gives you any resting place or way to feel as superior as those other games do. And I think I really like that about it. It feels more honest, and it feels more... Yeah, it's not... It is... This game is not a fantasy.
No. And that's what's interesting to me, like, on a game design level of, like, I can't even hope to pretend to even know how they did this, but that they managed to make puzzles that are not pleasurable necessarily to figure out, but they have that aha moment, you know, that, you know, Jonathan Blow often talks about, but there is no pleasure in the aha. I had to really struggle through this game. What is it, like 4 hours long? Mm-hmm. I had to play it over, I think, 3 weeks, because it was just taxing to me emotionally. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the fact that it can have the markers of that, you know, games about games often point to and be like, ah, look how evil this is. And and they have, they use these you know, tricks of a feedback loop of, you know, an aha moment, but not in any way, in a way that to subvert, not in a way that just gives you that dopamine shot and then says, ah, you should feel guilty about that. You are a bad person for feeling that way.
Right. This game instead kind of follows through the concept. You know, you figure out something, some obstacle in your path, and you get forward, but it doesn't reward you in a sense. It kind of shows you how much more terrible this world is than you already thought.
Another fresh hell that you
didn't reach. Like you tumble from one into the next, and I felt like, and in some sense, I really appreciated how the puzzles in this were just kind of reasonable for this kind of game. Like, they weren't, they were, you know, you've played a lot of games, you know your boxes, and you know, things like that. But I found these puzzles a lot easier than Limbo's, for instance, the predecessor's puzzles. And I appreciated that because, you know, often puzzles stop you in your tracks, and they just kind of grind the game to a halt where you're staring at the screen and you're just going into pure logic mode. And because the game, you know, never gets too convoluted, it keeps you focused on what is important, which actually isn't the puzzles. I mean, it's interesting you bring up Jonathan Blow in the aha moment, because, you know, at the beginning of this year, you know, The Witness comes out, and it is a game explicitly where that's saying there is nothing beyond the puzzles. Mm-hmm. We have no frame. We got some quotes for you. We got some statues, but we don't have anything else to say except the pure pleasure of puzzles. And some people feel like, oh, that's really, like, you know, pure and austere, and like. But I found it, you know, utterly so bloodless.
Yeah, me too. So lame.
Right, and this one really goes the other way, where the puzzles are serving the rest of the game. They're serving the world and everything else that it's doing. They are not the main thing. They are not really, you know, the focus at all. This was like a welcome, like, you know, breath of fresh air to me, because, you know, I love platformers, but the puzzle platformers, those single solution, or, you know, games like The Witness, there just seems like, in your purity, you have missed the whole point somehow. You know, you can be so smart that you have missed the entire point of everything, and why it even matters or feels. And this is a game with, you know, as subdued and restrained as it can be with, you know, in its presentation, it is full of awful affect that, you know, just kind of continues to, like, get inside you. And until the very end, it won't let go.
Totally. Yeah. I think, I totally agree that it's, to me, feels very self-masturbatory to be like, this, you know, it's a puzzle just about puzzles. That's it. But maybe that speaks to why I'm in games, and why, you know, there are some people that are in games for the systems, and some people that are just not in it at all for the systems, like, you know, in their purest form. But I don't know. I think it inside manages to speak above everything by like using it all as a tool in service of telling this ambiguous allegory, but with very specific, but through very specific like indicators. You know, like there's, despite its ambiguity, like, you know, in terms of what it's quote unquote about, there is so much specificity in terms of how the system, like, you know, how objects interact with each other, just how NPCs, like I was saying a little bit before, it, to me, that's its strength, is it's in its, what the large things it says with very small, distinctions.
It's very coherent, right? It hangs together, right? It, those controls from the chicks to the workers to the experiments at the end. The there's a through line here, even though it speaks so broadly and in ways that feel, you know, as good readers of dystopian fiction, you know, we know the markers, right? But the through line that makes it a game, that, you know, it doesn't oversell itself as like, you know, only a game could do this. And yet, you know, it is a game, and it bring its through line cuts through right through the avatar relationship, right through the sense of control and any affect that can come from that. It binds that in a way that, you know, its predecessor Limbo, I felt like, didn't at all. And I was thinking a lot about why does this game for me succeed in a way that Limbo doesn't, because they're really similar in some basic ways, you know. The first time I played it, I was just kind of like, this is like a better Limbo, right? Just the first time. But the more I thought about it, you know, having a coherence of being about something, or about, you know, being about many things, but having that all hang together. You know, in Limbo, you're often turning levers and manipulating objects. And there's that control with like a worm falling on your head at one point. But there's, you know, it is basically a grab bag of video game puzzles, physics puzzles that are, you know, interesting, but in the realm of video game puzzledom. And there is very little through line, and there's very little coherence or context. And frankly, that game is like a mean game. I don't know if that, you know, it's a kind of a sadistic, like it's a black comedy that's, you know, to me, a kind of cheap, whereas this game is like horror, but also like sympathetic horror. And there is a, you know, it is more inhuman, and yet a sense of, you know, desperate humanity in it that I think is totally missing from Limbo. But anyway, this, you know, this game is able to, I feel like, really do some things, you know, with its puzzle, with its, you know, coherent, you know, thematics, and with its humanity that that a lot of games like this in this genre, you know, really struggle with.
Totally, yeah, agree. I didn't play Limbo. I only played like, I don't know, 30 minutes of it when I was like, what, when did that come out? I was like 16, I think, and 17 or something. And yeah, so that was quite a long time. I mean, for me, quite a long time ago. Like, I was just, my relationship to games are totally different. But I think for me, what Inside kind of shows is just what, if you give a good groundwork, a chance to kind of reiterate, you know, if this indie studio, at least, you know, unlike so many other ones that kind of, you know, make one game, shutter, move on to the next project. If you get to kind of reiterate on it, you know, this basic system that they created, if they reiterated on it and like kind of just make it a little bit more, find a way to make that, you know, from, you know, biting, scathing, kind of mean game that kind of tricks you in a lot of ways.
It is
something that, and then on the other side, it's not that this game doesn't trick you. Inside does trick you, but never, it's not a cheap trick.
No, it's not cheap at all, right?
It's not at all. It's showing you, it's using that, to complicate, your entire feelings and everything else that's been established in it. So instead of like, you know, slapping the wrist, it's this, it turns your head and makes you see it in a completely different angle.
Right, right. It's brutal, yeah. But it's not like, haha, you died. You know, it's it doesn't have that haha at all, even though it's just as brutal.
Totally.
Yeah, what you're saying about iteration is something that generally, like, this game challenged me a little bit because, like I said, because I didn't like Limbo, and I've been pretty vocal about that, when I went into this, I was just like, kind of steeled against it, you know? It's a puzzle platformer, and like I said, single solution puzzles, I have a lot of problems, I just have a lot of criticisms of, and the fact that it's a kind of spiritual sequel to a game I strongly disliked. But you're right, it does basically take some of the ideas and just kind of fully, I almost feel like it goes all the way. It feels like Limbo was like a half step, you know, it was kind of like a world, like a game for children. This game feels like one for adults, even though it stars a child. There's something where it kind of, it went all the way and it it needed maybe Limbo to happen to get here. And I tend to be really critical of, like, you know, games that iterate or just kind of perfect. But I sometimes think that the only kind of sequels I'm really okay with taking ideas further is when they failed the first time. So it's almost like, I think there are good sequels to bad games, but a sequel to a good game better be different, or it's, you know, not worth that much to me. So, this was challenging me a bit on that. And even, I think, you know, we're talking thematically in the way the whole game holds together, but I think even graphically, this is such a, you know, advance, if you want to say, from Limbo, which, you know, was extremely flat and showy with its shadow and light and just kind of almost garish in its, you know, style, that it was just in your face. And this, I found a lot of the most interesting parts in replaying it just really watching the screen, the 2D line through a 3D looking space. And really, when Ellen, my wife, and I were playing it together, she was just constantly kind of marveling. And we would sometimes stop and she'd be like, why does that look so good? And I'd be like, yeah, why does it look so good? Like, what is it about the screen? Because it's not just pretty. I mean, the game is not, you know, in your face pretty. It's not throwing, like, Abzu, like, colorful fish in your face every 2 seconds. It is restrained, and yet the use of light and the use of
of depth.
Yeah, that field of depth, it really creates a very, I don't know, it's a big part of the experience and how I was kind of understanding it. I
totally agree.
Well, did you? I mean, I grew up with, like, 2D games that were trying to get 3D. You know, I was, like, in the NES Genesis era when I was really growing up with games. And so, you know, games were all 2D. And whenever there was 3D, you know, a little parallax scrolling or something, that was exciting. But when games went fully 3D, that's different. You know, it's just different to play a 3D game versus playing a 2D game with the depth of field, right? I don't know if that excites you like it does me, because only when Ellen was like, oh, why does that look so good? I was like, okay, you see it too, because I don't know if I'm just like a, you know, an old gamer who, like, you know,
right,
looks at 2D spaces.
I totally agree. I think it subverts a lot of the expectations that comes with it. You know, it's using its format in an interesting way, unlike so many other games. And unlike, I guess, Limbo itself, it's using the limitations of a 2D, you know, puzzle platformer to tell its story. You know, it's not just telling a story within the structure. It's using the structure to tell this larger story.
Right.
To break its own rules, to have things come to the foreground, you know. Right. And I think also, like, what we're kind of getting at is, I mean, the world that Limbo released into, just in games, if you want to go into, like, the system, the industry of games is just, I mean, first of all, Limbo started, I think, I mean, and some has some responsibility for starting, for showing how the, I guess, even just monetary success that an indie game could have.
Sure. It was one of the big first indies. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so kind of showing how it's, it's a different world coming into this one. You know, it's, it, This is what happens when you can break from a system. Second innovation.
That's a good point.
PlayDead can.
Right.
That PlayDead managed to have, you know, that had the success to be able to make the second iteration this, you know, and improve on a game that was, you know, groundbreaking at the time. But in retrospect, I can't even play it. How that there is progress, I guess.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about putting that success towards a truly better, more fully realized version of your first game. And not just like a lot of people like want to go back and just, you know, do a new definitive edition or something like that. And this is nothing of the sort, but it's, they put in the work that success allowed, and really, you really feel it. I mean, there is a level of detail and subtlety that's hard won, right? That it's almost easier to be, you know, garishly beautiful instead of like, you know, to be able to pull this off in a way that is always in line with your theme or what you're trying to convey, rather than just, you know, how many amazing things can I get on screen? because that depth that it's able to achieve, and yet, you know, again, you're that thin, you know, the world's cut into slices, right? You're going that 2D, that line through it, and yet the background, which you're constantly interplaying. It's not like just a static background. There's this constant interplay between foreground and background, right? At the beginning, there's things in the background that you're kind of learning about the world, but if they see you, then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's just constant kind of watching and trying to avoid being seen. But it makes it feel, I felt like the effects are sometimes like a good 2D in 3D space game has the same effects as like a landscape painting or something, right? It has this depth and this potential that kind of draws you in I don't know. It doesn't make it feel real, but like at no point when I was playing Limbo did I forget I was just playing like a 2D, you know, platformer with, you know, like some pretty black and white like slathered on top of it. Whereas here, you know, that was not the effect at all. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh. Well, I was just going to say that I when it came to thinking about the game a lot, about the title, because this is something that I was constantly, you know, the game has the entire text of the game is like one word, right? The title. Mm-hmm. And so even on visually on the screen, it handled its transitions from insides to outsides and vice versa. Interestingly, meaning it wasn't continuous. Most of the game is flowing along, but whenever you would like, you know, you come to a barn, right? And then the screen kind of stops, and when you get on the other side, it moves in, but it basically doesn't allow you to be in both spaces at once. You know, you go, you're underwater or you're above water, but you're mm-hmm. not both, right? I was noticing, especially playing last week, the way that it constantly does this, these transitions from interior to exterior are hard, right? They're not smooth mm-hmm. and scrolling. And it's an interesting effect because it makes, it again brings the title back to mind constantly, especially as you get towards the latter half of the game and you start, you don't know whether you're inside or outside anymore. You know, at the beginning, mm-hmm. you're outside, then you're in a barn, then you're in a building and you're outside, you know, it's clearer. But the farther you go, you know, are you in a building, in a cave? Are mm-hmm. you know, in that pulse field when you seem like you're outside and that pulse is like going mm-hmm. across like a field and it'll, you know, destroy you? Is that really outside? Because what outside creates that sort of pulse? There's just this, the water gets, you know, reversed. It just gets this weird, the inside outside gets all like mixed up for me. And that was, for me, mm-hmm. primarily visual at first. And I found that really compelling that it, you know, just in simple visual language of the game, it was getting me back to that, you know, it's systems thinking, its title, and yeah, that was just really powerful to me.
Totally. Yeah, I think, and like, so the single shot of the, you know, of the game, like if you didn't die, it would just be like a single shot going through. And I think somebody, I forget, I don't know who told me this, but somebody like mapped out the game exactly how each room and each environment kind of plots out. And it's kind of this crazy, it feels like this whirlwind, right? You're like, you're being kind of like a blender, like you said, of like inside, outside, inside, mm-hmm. outside. Always, I keep going back to the system, but it's true. It's always within the system until there's a very clear path where, or either at the end, it's a very clear, it's the first clear deviation from right. you are outside the walls.
Right.
You for sure for the first time. But yeah, the title, I started to make sense of it the second time more in terms of like how it turns the struggle. You know, in the three quarters of the way through when you become the blob, at first, you know, the struggle, you're very able-bodied. The struggle is more, on the outward world. The outward world is always trying to pursue you, trying
right,
to get you,
right.
And then once you become the monster, nothing can get you. The dogs can't get you, you can barrel through everything,
right.
but the struggle is inward. You are so disabled and your right. body is so bulbous and it doesn't fit in certain places. And, you know, it, that's when I started to see like this clear delineation between those two, I want to say like how you interact, you know, your two forms that you, which, what they allow you to do within right. the world.
Right. Right. My wife, when she first got into the blob, you know, there was this sense as if she had done something wrong. She was like, oh no, wait. And then she was like, mm-hmm. how do I get out of it? I was like, no, there's no getting out. And at first she was kind of like, kind of rebelling against that. Like, she had grown attached to the boy. She was just like, I want him back. But then as she kind of kept playing, at the end, she was just like, I had accepted it in a way and kind of fully, you know, frankly, the animation and the control on that blob is unbelievable. You know, like the game is so smooth and so easy to play in a way that like Limbo was not, it was like controlling a puppet, whereas this is just seamless. But when you get into that blob, it is, I'm just shocked at how, on a basic level, well it controlled, but how you felt mm-hmm. that body, you felt that hugeness, that squishiness, that weight, that in a way that, you know, our video game bodies are, you know, as we both know, so standardized and often so, mm-hmm. you know, male and, you know, just
Modernous,
right,
yeah.
right. There's no real diversity of bodies, and to really be forced into this and to feel a weird power in it, but also a weird pity and the groaning. And all, I don't know, that final transition is
totally
very powerful.
And your discovery of the body is just so, again, wordlessly, which is, you know,
right.
it's one of its biggest achievements, but without saying anything, you know, to grab an object and then just in terms of how the limbs are laid out, you're like, oh, I think I can raise this object up and touch
right.
You know, that button up there.
And oh, yeah, that pole you had, that like 2x4?
Yeah. You're like, exactly. And you're learning about your body in this kind of like, oh, I can do that, but also like, oh, I can do that.
Right.
It's like in this disturbing. And then so when you kill the executive even, it's just, you know, you don't know your own power. So you barrel through, you kill this, you squish this person under you. They turn into blood juice.
Right.
That covers you for the next two sequences, and you're covered, half your body is covered in this, like, oh, it just it's insane. It's an insane feat of game design. I don't know,
it really
cannot know how they did it, but that your body kind of, it's a fully adaptable thing that like kind of adapts to not only the environment in this like really complicated way, but also to your relationship to it. It's always evolving, and
I
commend them for kind of only bringing the blob in, you know, a quarter, you know, with a quarter left of the game to do,
right.
because there's so much. They saved, I don't even know how much time they must have spent on, you know, creating,
right.
but they saved so much of that. And it's such restraint to that very final quarter that there's just so much to discover. I felt like by the time I reached the beach, I was like, I'm not ready. I feel like there's so much
right,
else
exactly, right.
to experience in this body, and then
right.
you're just, it's done.
Right.
It's insane.
And, you know, my history of playing games I've been always very interested in the kind of bodies I can inhabit, because I've never been very comfortable in my own. And mm-hmm. I, you know, the way, even when it comes to to wait there. Like, I appreciated being in a bigger body as my own body has gained and lost weight over time. And there was just something there that, you're right, the restraint is frankly remarkable, because you know that in game making, you know, putting effort into something, you want people to see it. You want, you know, you want it to be used, instead of thinking, no, this must serve not, you know, just what's cool to do in the game, but it must serve what I'm trying to do. And it's all the more powerful for that.
Totally. And in terms, I totally agree about, and I think this is actually something that's special to games. Everyone tries to say, like, oh, you know, games are special for this and that reason. I think this is genuinely the sense of embodiment in a game is actually what is different. It's not agency. It's not any, it's just embodiment. And I think why a lot of people who, are, you know, have never felt comfortable with their body are attracted to games, you know, and these stories about, you know, your body kind of going through transformation, transition, games really speak to that. And they can speak to that in this unique way that I think Inside uses in a way that I haven't really, not only not seen games use the body in this way, but I've never imagined that the body could be used for this metaphor.
Right. No, I hadn't. Me neither. The game was constantly surprising in that way, right? You would do a transition, like the first time you get the submersible and you break through, and suddenly you break through into this gigantic area. And then you go into another door and it's like this tiny passage. The game, like, every time you transition, it's not smooth. It constantly surprises you. So by the end, when that happened, it was just, you know, in a game that was constantly, you know, subverting my expectations. And yet it was something that's also so gamey, as I was, like, you know, walking around with it. I just find moving in games, embodied in a character avatar, but just moving across the screen, like, a potentially, like, very, not just powerful, but like moving. Like, I enjoy running in games or moving across the screen. I find just passing through from old games that I played till now. I think I sent you that video. I don't know if you had seen had you seen that before?
I hadn't. It was amazing. Yeah. I loved it.
Right. So it called Go Right, and it's just those clips of different, you know, mostly 2D characters just moving right and then getting hit and pausing and then going forward again. And I think that there's something so powerful in games that in the way that they just, like, that elemental, like, dream logic of how do I get over a pit, right? It's something that, like, speaks to us in, like, this very basic way, moving right, getting over a pit, getting knocked back. But there's a pathos to it that I just find, you know, moving in a way that, you know, we don't associate with, we don't always talk about with game, because we look at, like, the emotions that we're familiar with in cinema or novels or things like that. But there is, just moving across the screen is a, you know, a moving experience, right? And so the blob at the end just, like, takes that all to, like, a, in another way that just that really lands.
Right. No, totally. And I think that's speaks to also, like, what I was saying a little bit before about, yeah, this game being not about escaping, but about progressing. It's like the same set game dream logic in this way where, you know, your wife intelligently, because probably she doesn't play so many, she doesn't play games
as I do.
Which is, you know, mindlessly, I didn't think, why am I doing this until the very end, you know, but why are you doing this? You know, we don't know, but you as a player, you know, if you have that sense of gaminess, you know, well, you just go right.
Of course.
You go, because there's nothing else to do. And I think, like, you know, it speaks to also what you were saying before about, you know, that vantage point kind of painting, where it is this straight line from beginning to end.
Right.
And you kind of can't move on any other, you know, there is no choice involved. You know, that's the kind of ultimately, it's just this, you know, endless march forward.
Right.
And there's something at once gamey, but at the same time, kind of that it breaks the idea of what games are apart, because, you know, while Limbo was about, you know, failing over and over again and dying,
right.
I think this is about, like, well, forget that, like, you know, reach the end and what, you know, it's kind of, it's the least it's the biggest FU to games, to the basic idea of like what momentum in a game means.
Right. And that's why I think that we take it for granted playing games so often that they are going to be, if not direct power fantasies, that they're going to be empowering, right? Or that they're going to be, they just almost all, even when they're dark, are kind of like these winning scenarios, right? They're just there's a sense of hope or a sense of progress that means, well, it can mean various things, I suppose, but it's still this sense of...
agency.
Yeah. If something that's, you know, it's, it doesn't always flatter you, but it definitely makes you feel,
in control in a way.
Right. Like you overcome something. Mm-hmm. And in here, although it is quite a showstopper at the end, in a sense, that agency, that resting point of the ending, and that sense of control or having been controlled, I don't know. It's again, it's doing, you know, it's identifiably a video game. But I still feel like the affect, the what I'm taking away from it is quite different. And not just because it's smarter, but because the total work has like done this to me for 4 hours until I get there. Right. And then afterwards I'm kind of left thinking, okay, like what am I going to do with this? And this, I think this is maybe even before the election when I played it in September. It left a kind of mark on me in a way that, like, you know, I just kept thinking about it later. Watching Ellen replay it, definitely I saw it differently. But it just kept lingering with me I just want to go there, I want to dream about it. Just in this way, this kind of persistent kind of like, nudging, sort of like, you know, and I think part of what that was about was that I kept thinking about the title, and I am, you know, very much an inside person, meaning, you know, I am an introvert, I am an indoors person more than an outdoors person, I am I cultivate my subjectivity like way too much. And yet this game with its inside, which I don't know, it that the one word of the game kept bothering me, because I guess I felt like instead of positing some outside that I may or may not reach, the longer I thought about the game, it kind of collapsed those distinctions. So for instance, if there is, like, it's not just can I get outside the system, but is there an outside? Like, is it even exist? You know, not just can I get there, I'm trapped. Because if I can't, then that's a different kind of world view about the system of the world. And I kept thinking about it both in terms of world, like if the whole world is the inside, then is there an outside? But I also kept thinking about it in terms of my own body, because like I said, as someone who, you know, spends a lot of time just reading and, you know, being in myself, that inside, which the game questions also with its puppets and drones and stuff, made me think about, you know, the opposite, which is if there's no difference between inside and outside, if it's all the same, that would mean the same for my body too. Like I'm, you know, not all inside, but maybe I'm all outside. And, you know, that's like a basic materialist, you know, view, which I think most people, you know, scientifically educated are supposed to have, but it's a hard one. You know, the whole like mind body split is old and one that we're not supposed to think, but it's awfully, it keeps coming back, depending on your belief about spirit or things like that, but also just the sense of being in a body and being something that is not, that has a difference in my inside and my outside, right? That I'm not just a drone or a husk being controlled by forces, you know, beyond myself. And yet I am. So I don't know. If I take this, like maybe there's not such a strong distinction between inside and outside. Maybe if I'm all body, you know, and I am, I mean, I accept that on some level, like my mind is made of matter. It is body. It is, you know, not separate. I'm not a ghost. If I accept all that, and I do, the stakes of it you know, that makes the reality of death, right, a much more, a different prospect than if you hold on to any sort of something else. And so I don't know, that collapse for me is someone who basically resists it, who takes refuge in my inside and always thinks about an inside-outside distinction, a self and world. For me, the game, by collapsing that, not only made me, you know, wonder about getting outside this system, but also my own inside, I don't know,
yeah.
Does that make sense?
I mean, totally. No, it's, you know, I think, and this is again why it's successful to me, is because the game is distilling, if you distill something to just a system, this bare system, mm-hmm. There, like, you know, obviously I don't know any of the specifics of this, but there's some word for how systems kind of mimic each other. There's this one structure that various systems mimic, which is like, you know, the human brain. And, you know, if you like kind of can be distilled into a pattern that is mimicked by, you know, the way the planets move, the way the universe, like, you know, these things where where it falls away, the distinction between outside and inside, is when you see that these are all just, you know, kind of Russian dolls of each other. That, you know, whatever. So you're a boy, you know, in this game, you're controlling a boy, and within this boy is this system within him. And then there's a system that's outside of him, and then the system controlling the system. And then, you know, it's, you know, everybody is kind of, that's to me where it's, power is because it distills that pattern into this, you know, really minimalist form. You can read so much into it. You can read this as a you know, metaphor for the mind body, as a metaphor for social, you know, larger social movements or societies. And you can see it as a metaphor for, you know, like nihilism, you know, bringing it, you know, to, you know, the universe and how there is no ultimate. Mm-hmm. So it's just, that's where I think it, what makes it so, and good art, to be totally honest, is that it, you know, it just, it's speaking to one thing, one small thing that kind of ripples, it has ripple effects and can kind of have an echo in several, if you look at it from several different angles.
Right. I reminded me, one review I read that by Jed Presgrove, who I think is a very good critic, often very contrary to a lot of things. But he and I we agree on some things, but on this game, he wasn't very fond of it, but he called it nihilistic. And I was thinking, maybe. Actually. Yeah, maybe. I mean... I think that your response, there is something in there about, in the game about that. It is offering no real refuge in a certain way. I do think, as we've talked about, it has this strain of a kind of humanism running through it that, you know, it's not present in Limbo, and it definitely, it evokes certain feelings, but it doesn't offer a way out, and it doesn't suggest a world of meaning. You know, I could feel when I was thinking about it later, I'm someone who, you know, argues a lot for subjectivity and, you know, defends my own and like I said, cultivates it and really, you know, pushes it. And the game, you know, in some ways is like, okay, you can do that. But, you know, is that going to, you know, it's up to you. Do you think that's going to matter in the end? And so, I like that the game kind of goes all the way in the sense that it doesn't, as many ways as it can be read and as many interpretations we might have, it's not really doing like halfway or half measures, right? If it's nihilistic, it kind of goes with that in an uncomfortable way. And so it leads us towards an end where I'm not sure, you know, I had those feelings back in September and now playing it again, I've just been thinking a lot about, you know, the end, not just the end of the game, but where I'm left with everything. And I don't know that I have any answers about that, but I don't know.
It's very big.
It is. And I'm just, I mean, it's not that I need, the game is not offering a conclusion and I don't have one. And I like sitting with that. It's hard to kind of stay in that uncertainty. You know, the questions about inside and outside are very simple and basic and also unanswerable. And so there is a way in which sitting with those questions and dwelling with them, dwelling in that doubt or uncertainty. I mean, a lot of art does this, right? That negative capability. And I tend to like that a lot. But you can say that, oh, I like to dwell in doubt, and it sounds like all like high-minded and stuff. But if it's really disturbing, and I think that the game goes that way, then dwelling in a kind of, you know, not limbo state, but in some state of uncertainty about these systems, but not just uncertainty like, oh, it could go either way, but like more like, oh, it's not going a real good way, and I'm looking for what to do about that. Because I guess that's the feeling at the end, that I'm not saying, well, you could read it positively or negatively. I think that positive readings are hard to come by. I think the game has a lot in it that's trying to push back against that, and yet those little bits of humanism or rest in the end, because there is a sense of release at the end, a kind of just coming to rest, even if that's death. And I think it takes seriously that, you know, a world in which maybe that's all you have. And I don't know, that it leaves me, I don't want to say hope, but of something where, you know, okay, if escape is not possible, right? If we face the reality of our, you know, eventual death, then that's despair-inducing, sure. But I also, there's another part of me, especially in the last 2 weeks, that's been like, okay, this is what it is, now what? So what am I going to do? You know, like, not that I need to do something like, you know, right now, but there's this sense that I want to prove the world wrong a little bit. You know, there's something in me that is really kind of cantankerous and just kind of like wants to say no all the time. And, you know, it can be in a game, it can be in a, you know, daily life, and it can certainly be after an election, a just sense of no, I'm, you know, and, you know, you can take some solace in that, or you can, you know, move it towards stronger action. But facing some of these things, you know, I never want to, I never want to, you know, shy away from facing the truth or a truth. And yet sometimes those truths are really hard to, I mean, whether about yourself or they're just about death or something, you know, just really like, you know, I understand why people don't want to face them. But they often afterwards, you know, you just can't stay horrified forever because you're going to get hungry and you're going to get tired and, you know, you know, time keeps passing. And so, totally. You know, you figure out what you're going to do with that, like, and, you know, wanting to push back against the world. It's a human gesture. It's maybe a futile gesture, but yeah, it's one I definitely feel. Well, thanks, Jess, for talking to me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, of course. It's been a pleasure.